mostly. So golly, honey, don't say. You're listening to Smoke Signals. My name is Dan Smoke, and I'm in the studio this afternoon with Jason Kroskoff, one of the CHRW volunteers. Do you want to say hello there, Jason?
Hi, Dan.
Yeah, Jason is one of our technical engineers who looks after the games throughout the CHRW sports, UWO sports season, and he's one of the engineers who looks after football and all the sports?
That's right, pretty much everything.
Oh, yeah, well, we're glad to have him here today because he's indicated that he's going to teach us how to do phoners, phone interviews, as well as how to queue up show IDs, station IDs, interviews while we're playing something on the air.
That's right.
Great. Okay, so we're always learning. So we're always meeting people who can teach us. That's one thing we very strongly believe in, always remaining teachable. Always remaining teachable. That's one of the most important teachings you can learn in life. Right now, I want to share with you an article that we got from the CBC. It's regarding the East Coast fishing agreements, the fishing wars, as they have been termed after last summer's the Department of Fisheries notions, the RCMP, and their repeated attacks and the low-intensity warfare that they waged on the Escanubidich, Burnt Church Native community, Native fishing community, as well as the Indian Brook First Nations community. And so I just want to read to you this one story, and then I'm going to read a follow-up story a little bit later on in the show regarding the reaction of one of the chiefs to this most recent turn of events. A Nova Scotia Native chief said Thursday that First Nations Atlantic Canadians need to achieve unity before they sign any new deals on fishing rights with the federal government. Aboriginal chiefs are meeting in Halifax to discuss a revised clause in their centuries-old fishing treaty. The federal government is offering several concessions on wording meant to clear the way for a new agreement on native fishing in Atlantic Canada. Indian Brook Chief Reg Maloney, who heads a reserve near Shubenacadie, Nova Scotia, said Thursday that he hopes the region's 34 native bands would refrain from signing deals that he believes will eat away at Aboriginal treaty rights. But Maloney said he understands that the lure of fishing resources and money could be too hard to resist for some bands. And another native leader said that only 5 of the 34 bands aren't planning to sign the new deal. Under the new arrangement, each band will determine the details of the deals, which are reported to be valued at about $500 million and to include money for training and for gear. Bands that don't sign will still have access to last year's interim fishing deals, but won't be eligible for the perks of equipment, training, and mentoring that come with the new deal. Ottawa also hopes that the new deals could help avoid the kind of violence that plagued last year's native fisheries in New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. So that's just an update about they are getting closer and closer to signing a template fishing agreement that will be signed by, according to this statement, or according to this news article, be signed by about 30 First Nations communities on the East Coast, with about 5 that will be not signing any agreements because they believe that any agreements will affect their treaty rights for their future generations, and they don't want to take that chance or take that risk by signing anything with the federal government, because there has been a history of agreements, modern day agreements, eroding the actual treaty rights that have been gained in the Supreme Court of Canada. For example, in this Marshall decision, which was the Supreme Court ruled that First Nations people on the East Coast have a right to fish, hunt, and gather on the East Coast, and that's protected. That's an Aboriginal constitutional human right of the East Coast First Nations people, mainly the Mi'kmaq, the Malaseet, and the Penobscot First Nations. So that's a little update about that. Another update we wanted to bring you a little bit more closer to home is the conclusion of the Walk Against Racism that was organized by the Caldwell First Nations. The Caldwell First Nations had announced this walk about 3-4 months ago, and this was their second annual spring anti-racism action. It took place last Monday, April the 23rd, and it concluded yesterday, April the 27th. And members of the Caldwell First Nation and their supporters seek to build public awareness of the problems with racism that they and other Indigenous peoples face in Canada. And there is a number of the actual acts of racism that the Caldwell people have had to deal with began back in December 1998, when the agreement in principle between the Crown, the federal government, and the Caldwell First Nations became public knowledge in that region. The surrounding community of Chatham-Kent responded with instantaneous hostility and began mobilizing to fight the proposed settlement. Within weeks, a community organization called the Chatham-Kent Community Network was established. Headquartered on the main street of Blenheim, its purpose was to find ways to fight this agreement in principle. And they have been very successful. They have, in fact, they may be going all the way to the Federal Appeal Court to fight the Caldwell First Nations, the Indian Commission of Ontario, and the federal government, Department of Indian and Northern Affairs, for their right to see certain documents, historical documents, research documents, that the government is not willing to show because that's their research and that is privileged information. And so they have refused the request by the Chatham-Kent Community Network to provide that information to them. And so the Chatham-Kent Community Network has been successful in going all the way to the Federal Court of Canada, and they most recently lost a decision in the federal court, and now if they want to appeal that, they can go to the Federal Court of Appeal, which probably won't be heard probably till the fall time. And then if they lose there, then if they still want to go further, they would have to seek leave to go to the Supreme Court of Canada. But it doesn't look like that they're going to go that far. Community opposition to the Caldwell First Nations Agreement in principle has manifested itself in many ways. Huge, spontaneous community meetings where numerous anti-Aboriginal remarks were made and the CKCN was formed. Landowners in the surrounding area initiated a not-for-sale campaign. Signs bearing this message with large, bold, green lettering pepper the countryside around the few homes and properties currently held by the Caldwell Band members. The granddaughter of Caldwell Chief Larry Johnson was told by an elementary school classmate that her house was going to be burned down and for her to move out. Dead animals have been placed on the Caldwell property. Slurs and shouting aimed at the Caldwell come from cars that pass by on their property, drive-by slurs. In the fall of 2000, a paint gun was fired at the chief's house. A few days later, someone fired a pellet gun at the band office. Cars sit and silently observe the staff at the band office and the chief's family, especially in the dark hours of the night. The new multi-purpose community building on the property where the band office is located has been vandalized, a victim of hate crime. Agribusinessmen, including farmers and seed companies, have been in the lead of the opposition, financing legal challenges, community actions, and even using their agricultural chemicals in a manner that threatens the Canadians in the community who support the Caldwell people. The regional municipality of Chatham-Kent has hired a 4-person expert team to fight this agreement in principle. Canadians opposing the Caldwell settlement have sided with a small group of Caldwell dissidents who would rather get a share of cash settlement for these long-standing issues than see the development of the reserve. These divide and rule tactics are ancient colonial strategies for maintaining control of indigenous peoples. They are recognized as such by the majority of Caldwell members, making them more determined than ever to see the agreement in principle approved in a full band vote, as they avenge the horrible situations that their ancestors had to endure because of this 210-year-old denial of justice. And during the 100-kilometer anti-racism action in spring 2000, this was the first one that took place in a walk from Windsor, Ontario, to the Caldwell Band office. Participants were insulted by passing motorists with a high Hitler salute and racial slurs, which is documented, which is videotaped, and they have that all on video. So that's the update on the Caldwell First Nations walk against racism. In fact, they even sent a letter to the Member of Parliament for Chatham-Kent, Essex, Mr. Jerry Picard. And they wrote on behalf of the Caldwell Walk Against Racism for the opportunity to meet with him. This is what they say. On Thursday, April 26th, the Walk Against Racism walkers will arrive in Chatham. As we pass by your office at approximately 3:30 p.m., two representatives, a First Nations rep and a Canadian representative, will stop at your office to discuss the positions you have taken on Aboriginal people's land, treaty, and cultural issues over the past few years. We would also like to hear about any anti-racism initiatives you have undertaken in the Chatham-Kent riding since 1998, when some Caldwell First Nation members and other Aboriginal people in your riding began experiencing racial prejudice, threats, and attacks. We hope that, like those of us involved in the walk against racism, you condemn this sort of intolerance. Your acceptance of our request to meet with you would be a first step towards correcting the anti-Native backlash that has been swirling in this region since you and other community leaders first called public attention to the 1998 signing of the agreement in principle that would resolve long-standing land and treaty issues between the Caldwell First Nation and the Government of Canada. So, from what I understand, Jerry Picard refused to meet with the walkers, and so right now it's the walkers are assembled in the Caldwell territory, where there is a conference on racism taking place with women from the Four Directions, and the women joined the walkers on the last leg of the walk on Friday, yesterday. They walked from Chatham into the Caldwell territory, which is a distance of about 20 kilometers, and there was about 200 women who joined this walk at that stage for this final leg. And they're meeting this week in the Caldwell territory. It's the Gathering the Voices Conference of Women, who are held in very high esteem in the Native culture, but in other cultures as well. And they are meeting women from the Four Directions, black, Asian, all non-Native, white, all the First Nations are represented there. They're going to be meeting over the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday till tomorrow, at which they will conclude. And they're documenting and recording their voices, their experiences with racism. And this research or this documentation will be going down to the United Nations Conference Against Racism in Durban, South Africa, this August of this summer. And so that will be going. So it's rather historic, and that there's it's really good that there has been so much support at this stage, because Chief Johnson has also gone to the United Nations Human Rights Commission, and he has appealed both there and at the United Nations Working Group for Indigenous People. He has appealed that about the racism that exists in Canada. At that level, people don't think there's racism here in Canada. But he went there to remind them that it does, and he reported on some of the experiences that his people, his community, his nation have had to endure since 1998. So now they know at the international level. And at this conference against racism that will be taking place this summer, these women will also be reporting their experiences as well. So we'll keep you updated about that. We're now going to listen to two more featured artists, Joy Harjo. Joy Harjo is a Creek author. She is also a spoken word jazz musician with a group called Poetic Justice. And she has one CD out. She has several books out as well. She teaches at the University of New Mexico. And Lunar Drive. Lunar Drive is a mix of different nations, of First Nations members. They've formed kind of a hip-hop group called Lunar Drive. The first song we're going to hear is Joy Harjo from her Letter from the 21st Century CD. This is the song She Had Some Horses. And then we're going to listen to Lunar Drive from their CD here at Black Mesa, Arizona, the cover song here at Black Mesa, Arizona, here on Smoke Signals.